Good evening. Great to see you tonight. Appreciate you being here so that we can worship again together and study from God's Word together. It's always encouraging me to see you back on Sunday night so that we can spend this time together and worship to our God. Wanted to say thank you to those who were able this afternoon. I know it was short notice and so not many people were able to, but for those who were able to come out and help with some of the hanging up and some of the other prep stuff for VBS, I appreciate that help very much. Also, thank you for the kind comments after the sermon. I don't know why, I just feel undeserving of those sometimes, but I appreciate the things that you say and the encouragement that you give me. Tonight we want to turn our attention to the book of Esther. The book of Esther is a unique book in our Bible. First, it's unique because it is only one of two books that bear the name of a woman. The other book, of course, being the book of Ruth. Second, and most interestingly about the book of Esther, there is no mention of God in the entire book. Not once in the book of Esther will you ever see God's name mentioned. Now, just because his name is not mentioned, though, don't mistake that as him not being there. Because he is seen throughout the book. His power is seen throughout, although he's never mentioned by name. Frank Dunn, in reference to this, says the book of Esther provides the only biblical portrait of the many Jews who chose to remain in Persia rather than return to Palestine. You remember when Cyrus conquered the Babylonian Empire, the Persian Empire took over, Cyrus issued the decree, which Isaiah had prophesied that this would happen hundreds of years before it took place, but Cyrus issued the decree that the Jews could return to Jerusalem, that they could rebuild the temple and the walls of the city. And so many of the Jews at that point left to go back. In fact, if I'm not mistaken right now, y'all are studying Ezra and Nehemiah in the Sunday morning class. That's a record of them coming back and the work that they set out to do in rebuilding both the temple and the walls. And so Cyrus had made that proclamation. And while a large number of Jews did return, there were also a number of Jews that remained where they were settled. And the book of Esther gives us a glimpse into what was happening in that area. He goes on to say God's guiding hand of providence and protection on behalf of his people is evident throughout the book, although his name does not appear in it. There is mention of fasting, but no reference to prayer. Yet the reality of God's providence is the central message of the book. Matthew Henry said of the book of Esther, "If the name of God is not here, his finger is." And that's certainly the case as you read through the book. There are five principal individuals in the book of Esther. There's King Ahasuerus. We know him better in history classes by the name Xerxes. And so we have this king of the Persian Empire. We have the first queen, the Queen Vashti. Vashti is only there in the very beginning because Vashti is going to be kicked out of being the queen, which is going to pave the way for Esther to find herself in that role. There is a man by the name of Mordecai who serves as a father to Esther. While not her physical father, he fills that role. Of course, there is Esther herself, and then the protagonist of the account, a man by the name of Haman. As we look at Esther, and we want to spend some time talking about her tonight, we want to notice five things about her. Five things about this great woman who served God faithfully. Number one, Esther, she was a woman of conviction. She was a woman of conviction. Here is a woman who finds herself among people who are not her own. She's going to find herself very quickly thrust into the king's palace. She's going to find herself as the queen. And so it's a lot of difficulties that she has to maneuver here. But through all of that, there were things that she was convicted by that she remained true to. One thing that we see about her is she revered Mordecai. And Mordecai, as I said, was a father to her. And she had respect to him. She obeyed him. Here was an individual who, and we'll talk about this here in just a few, who's going to come with her with a request for something that she needs to do that she's not going to want to do. Something that could be very dangerous if she does it. But yet, because of her reverence for Mordecai, she's going to obey him. A second thing that we see about Esther that she was convicted by, she respected authority. She's going to respect the authority of the king. She respected the authority of Mordecai. Here was someone who did not look for opportunities to skirt responsibility, but she respected those who were placed in these positions. So often we live in a time where it seems like the idea of authority on all levels, whether that be governments, whether that be police officers, whether that be parents, whether that be God's word, whatever spot you want to put it on, it seems like authority is something that is scoffed at, something that is ridiculed. But as Christians, we understand that we have a responsibility to respect those who are placed in positions of authority. Titus chapter 3 and verse 1, Paul writes to Titus and says, "Of the church, remind them to be submissive to rulers and authorities, to be obedient, to be ready for every good work." And so Esther was someone who respected authority. And thirdly, and probably most importantly, she was someone who lived righteously. Esther, despite being in a land far from home, despite having customs and things around her, she remained faithful to God. She lived righteously. I always think of her as the female version of Daniel. You know, you think about Daniel. Daniel finds himself in a strange land among strange people, strange customs, and he has all these opportunities where he could have just adopted the customs and the traditions of the land, but in so doing, that would have meant that he would have had to disobey the commands of God. And we see throughout the book of Daniel, Daniel never doing that. Daniel always remaining true to God. And we see that same mindset in Esther. While the book of Esther does not say, as it does of Daniel, that of Daniel it says he purposed in his heart. I think the same though is true of Esther. That Esther purposed in her heart. She made a decision that no matter what, she was going to faithfully serve the God of heaven. She was an individual who lived righteously. When we think about Esther, when we think about characteristics that make her who she is, number one, she was a woman of conviction. Number two, she was a woman of confidence. She was a woman of confidence. Going back to Esther chapter 4 and verse 16, and we're jumping ahead just a little bit, but here as a plan has been hatched by Haman to eradicate the Jews. And he's gotten the king to sign this, and Mordecai has learned of this. He's come to Esther. He's told Esther of this. He's let Esther know that, hey, look, you've got to say something to the king. And the problem with that is this could cost Esther her life. And so she has to decide what she's going to do. And in Esther 4:16, we see that decision. She said, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my young women," these were the ones who served her, "will also fast as you do." Now, here's an instance where, and this was mentioned in the quote by Frank Dunn, that there's mention of fasting in the book, but no mention of prayer. And while prayer is not mentioned here, what do we know about fasting? Well, fasting and prayer go hand in hand, right? We see that in so many other places in Scripture. And so no doubt, along with the fasting, they're praying to God. She says, "Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish." Esther, in this instance, knew what was right. And she was willing to do that even at the cost of her own life. She didn't ask others to do what she herself was unwilling to do. She had confidence in that fact that God would be there with her. She had confidence in the fact that there would be those who were praying for her and were there beside her. Here we have a woman who was confident in serving the God of heaven. Number three, Esther is an exemplary woman because she was a woman that was controlled by God. She was a woman that was controlled by God. In Esther chapter 4 and verse 14, backing up a couple of verses from where we just read, Mordecai, speaking to her, says, "For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish." I love the faith of Mordecai here. And I know we're talking about Esther, but break with it for just a moment to mention this about Mordecai. I love the faith of Mordecai because Mordecai believed that God was going to rescue them no matter what. God was not going to allow this to take place. And Mordecai says, "Esther, I think you're the one that's supposed to do this, but if you choose not to, deliverance will come from somewhere else. God will have someone who will step up, who will allow them to be controlled by Him so that deliverance can come." Mordecai believed no matter what, God was there for them. He goes on to tell Esther, "And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this." Mordecai tells Esther, "Esther, I think maybe it's the case that you are where you are right now for this very purpose." You know, we talk about how there's not miraculous, the miracles today that there were during the first century, but that does not mean that God's not at work. We talk about the area of providence, and the book of Esther is a great book that shows this idea of providence where God works through natural means to bring about His purpose. It might be that we find ourselves in a certain situation at a certain time because God worked behind the scenes to put us there so that we could help in a time of need. And that's what Mordecai tells Esther here. "I think you've been put here at this time for this purpose." But you see, that only works if we're willing to allow God to use us. God doesn't force anyone's hand. God is not going to make us serve Him. You know, when you think about and you pray to God for good things to happen to someone, does God just magically make something good happen for that person? Or does He maybe put you in a position where you can do something good for that person? The question becomes, will we allow God to use us in that way? Esther was someone who did, who allowed herself to be controlled by God. Number four, Esther, she was a woman of courage. She was a woman of courage. For the sake of time, we're not going to read through chapters 5 through 7, but that's really the crescendo of the account, where we see everything happening that, you know, up to this part, there's been these plots, these plans, but chapters 5 through 7 is where the action really begins to take off. In the beginning, Esther enters the throne room. Now, you might be thinking, as you hear that statement, if you've never read the book of Esther, aren't familiar with the customs of the time, you might think, what's the big deal? She walked into the throne room. That's a huge deal. Under Persian law, you did not enter the king's throne room unless the king requested your presence. There were two guards that stood on the inside of the door to the throne room. You know what their job was? To take off the head of anyone who entered the throne room who was not called to the throne room. That was their purpose. Esther knew that. But Esther went in anyway. As she entered the throne room, the only thing that could save her would be the king would extend his scepter to her. If the king did not do that, she would die right there on the spot. Think about the courage that it took to put her hand on that door, to push that door open and to step through. But she was a woman of courage, and she did so. Of course, you remember that the king extended the scepter, of course, to her. He did not take her life, and he asked her, "What can I do for you?" Of course, she has a feast for the king, invites Haman to come as well. And we see her courage once again, not only as she entered the throne room, but as she exposed Haman's wickedness. Haman was one of the king's trusted advisors. I mean, this was somewhat it wasn't set up like our government, but the best I can give you is this is like the vice president to the president, okay? So this wasn't, Haman wasn't just some guy. He was the king's guy, all right? And Esther's going to say, here's all the wrong things that Haman's been doing. She's going to expose Haman's wickedness. Of course, you recall, and there's another great lesson in the book of Esther, Haman had had these gallows built to hang Mordecai. He hated Mordecai. He hated the Jews. And so he had these gallows built where he was going to hang. He was going to kill Mordecai. And of course, what happened to Haman? He found himself on his own gallows. He found himself losing his life because of his own hatred. The courage of Esther is seen in that she entered the throne room. She exposed Haman's wickedness. And then number three, she entreated for God's people. Up to this point, Xerxes, Ahasuerus, whichever term you want to use, he did not know that she was Jewish. That was something that they had kept back from him. And so by exposing that to him, telling him who she was, she did so in order to save her people, but she could have found herself once again on the outs. He could have removed her from being queen. But of course he doesn't, and he writes another law. If you remember the law of the Medes and the Persians, one of the big things about that law is it could not be altered. That's why Daniel, when Darius signed the law that whoever prayed to any god other than him would be thrown in the den of lions, even though he didn't want to throw Daniel in there, he had to. Why? Because once the law was signed, the law of the Medes and the Persians could not be altered. Same thing here. Haman's already convinced Ahasuerus to sign this law that Jews on this certain day were all to be attacked and killed, but now he signs another one that says the Jews are allowed to defend themselves. Of course, they do such, and as a result, they are saved. But all of this took place because Esther was a woman of courage. Fifth and finally, she was a woman of compassion. She was a woman of compassion, especially compassion towards God's people. Notice Esther chapter 7, verses 3 and 4 with me. Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be granted me for my wish and my people for my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. If we had been sold merely as slaves, men and women, I would have been silent. For our affliction is not to be compared with the loss to the king." In chapter 8, in verses 5 and 6, it says, Esther rose and stood before the king. And she said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and if the thing seems right before the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman the Agagite, the son of Hammanatha, which he wrote to destroy the Jews who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming to my people? Or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Esther loved her people. She was a woman of compassion. As we look at Esther, we see a strong woman who stood and who entreated for her people in a time when really that wasn't done. I would submit to you, we need more Esthers. We need more people who are convicted to serve God, who are courageous, who are compassionate, who will follow Him no matter what. What about you this evening? Are you following God faithfully? If you're not a Christian, will you take that step to follow Him, to put Christ on in baptism? Or maybe you've done that, but you're not following Him now. Friend, come back home. You're among a group of people tonight who love you, who care about you, who want you to go to heaven. We'll pray with you. We'll pray for you. Let's all serve God faithfully. If you need to respond to heaven's invitation, we'd ask you to come right now as we stand and sing.